Hello and welcome, my name is Luke Burridge, and this is the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. For more information about the podcast, about me, or anything like that, just check out the website sfbrp.com and click on the SFBRP wiki, and the information pages all takes you through to the same place there. Also, you can download episode number one of the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. I talk a bit about me and the podcast, although I think actually the podcast has evolved over time, so that's maybe not quite up to date anymore. I think that was actually the third version of that I'd recorded. So maybe I'll be recording a new episode one and putting it out on the feed again, strangely enough. But anyway, if you don't know, this is the show where I review every science fiction book that I read as I read it. And there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I read it. Or whenever I have the time to review the book, I review the book. So that's pretty much why it's been well over a week since the last book review, even though I finished the book that I'm reviewing tonight quite a long time ago, because I've been reading another book, and I started it too soon. So pretty much when I start reading a book too soon, if I get into it, the book that I want to review, you know, that's sort of in my book time, my spare time book time. And so instead of sitting down and reviewing it, I just sit down and read the book that I'm really into at the time. A little bit of a delay there. Today's book that I'm going to read, though, is probably the newest book, the latest book that has been written that I've reviewed so far. It was only released last year, 2007, just came out in paperback here in Germany, so I thought I'd snap it up and review it. It's called The Prefect by Alistair Reynolds, and I have actually reviewed one of his books before. I thought it was going to be a novel. That turned out to be two small novellas stuck together. So you can go back and listen to that to get a little bit more insight into Alistair Reynolds' work if you want. So let's get into it, really. The novel, quite a big chunky novel. It's a mystery. No, tell you what, let me set up the world first. The world of Revelation Space is what it's set in, which a lot of Reynolds' work, most of Alistair Reynolds' work, have been set in this same universe. And like I explained in that previous book review, it's set a few hundred years in the future. I think this book's set like maybe 2200 or 2400 or something like that. I can't remember straight off the top of my head. But like 300 or 400 years in the future. And humans are spread out across lots of solar systems, across in sort of this region of the galaxy. Thing is, there's no faster-than-light technology to hold together a single society. So there's lots of, they're all sort of split up into different, on different planets and different habitats and things like that. And there's a class of people called the Ultras, and they provide communication between the colonies and all that kind of stuff. Also, extraterrestrials do exist, but they can't communicate with humans. They're all sort of unfathomable clouds of material in space and energy fields. And of course, in the previous book, which was explored quite a bit in the other books by Alistair Reynolds, you've got the pattern jugglers, which are sort of intelligent ecosystems on water-filled planets, but we don't get to meet any of them here in this book. The one defining feature of Revelation Space is that it's normally like this, that all of the books are quite dark, and there's a gothic feel to it, and there's the environments and the character, there's lots of sort of transhuman kind of modifications of people changing their bodies and minds and all that kind of stuff, and this pretty much resulted from a crash of the civilizations caused by what is called the Melding Plague, and that event is covered a lot in his other books. And I think it's like this like an out-of-control nanotechnology kind of situation there. The thing is, this book, The Prefect, is set before any of his other books, so it's still in the Revelation Space universe, but it's before the Melding Plague has hit. It's very different in tone. There's lots of more, like, higher technology, or different technologies involved in this book, because the Melding Plague sort of changes things quite a lot, so some technologies are lost, and others are developed in response. It's set around the planet where Chasm City, another sort of like favourite location of Alistair Reynolds in the Revelation Space universe, but it's not set on the planet of Yellowstone. It's set in the habitats orbiting in sort of, I imagine them, it's never really clearly expressed, but I imagine it's sort of like the rings of Saturn, you know, sort of like lots of different orbits all in the same plane. It's called the Glitter Band, and there's about 10,000 habitats, 100 million people living there in the Glitter Band, and it's the Glitter Band, of course, and Yellowstone is very much a communications hub for known space at the time. And the whole feel of the book in this is a lot brighter and cleaner than the previous books of Alistair Reynolds set in the Revelation space universe has been. So the political setup here is, it actually reminds me quite a bit of the first book that I reviewed here on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. It was called Outcasts of Heaven Belt. And in that, there's this, what's known as the Demarchy, like an anarchic democracy where every single person has one vote and votes are cast all the times on all the issues. And yeah, it's quite a sort of like a mob tyranny kind of situation that that comes out of this, which I enjoyed in that book. This book, you find a slightly different exploration of that idea, where everyone having at least one vote, but those who are judged like over time to vote in the favour, like in the long-term favour of the glitter band as a whole, those people actually get not more than one vote, but their vote is weighted in such a way that it can be worth up to three times as much as a normal person's vote. So that way, intelligent and knowledgeable people have more say in the direction that the glitter band goes, and the ignorant people have less say, which I thought was quite cool. Also, they get to a point where they have this thing called abstraction, which is like the computer-human interface, and they vote through abstraction as well, which means that they, because they're being like asked for voting on different subjects all the time, it just becomes part of their unconscious actions that they're voting on the future of or issues in the glitter band all the time, even without conscious thought. And I thought that was quite an interesting idea too. So that's pretty much the setup. The story, it's like I said, I was going to say before, it's like a crime novel. It's like a mystery thriller, like a whodunit kind of thing, where you follow a policeman, which he's not called a policeman, he's called a prefect. And his name is Tom Dreyfus, and he works for Panoply? Panoply, I guess is the way to call it, Panoply, and that's the security force, the police force of the Glitter Band. And he's what's called a field prefect, which means he goes out to other habitats in the Glitter Band and he enforces laws to do with voting and election fraud, because all of the habitats in the Glitter Band, they're very independent, they can do whatever they want as long as the people can vote. And that's the only thing that they have to provide for the people in there, you know. So there's, you get to find out quite a lot about these different habitats, but yeah, the Panoply really makes sure that there's no election fraud and keeps things under wraps like that, and external issues as well. So if anything needs to, you need any dealings with the Ultras or other factions in the universe, in the solar system, the Panoply deals with that. So the book opens with a series of events where Tom has to visit these various different habitats, and there's one where there's a lockdown because the people on the habitat or the computers on the habitat, they found a loophole in the voting program. So they go down there, crack that down, and one of his team members, because he works in teams quite a lot, one of his team members called Thalia, she comes up with a solution to the bug, and you follow her throughout the first half, three quarters of the novel, and she's like the second main character. Her storyline is the second storyline, and she goes to different habitats, like four different habitats in the glitter band, and she installs the update, like the patch to these various voting servers and the abstract servers called the Cause. So that's one part of the novel. There's another thread of the novel. Well, actually, just go back to that, because I'll just cover it now. That is actually a thread of the novel that I actually quite enjoyed. Thalia, quite an interesting character, a young recruit, and she gets put in some really tight situations, and we go on a lot of adventures with her. And also, because she goes to these different habitats, she's pretty much like our new eyes, because she's going to a lot of these places for the first time, whereas Tom, the lead character, he's been there a lot of times, so she's our way into the glitter band, and that's quite interesting too. Also, at the start of the book, there's another few little things, you know, I say little things, big things that happen. There's an ultra starship destroys one of the habitats with its sort of interstellar drive, you know, and everyone's killed, but there are some personality backups that are found, and these are beta level simulations, sort of like brain scans that can run on computers. And of course Tom has to question these betas, try and find out what's going on. And there's another quite favorite part of the story for me is like, because you get the old debates of like, is a copy of a human mind that can run at the same speed of a human mind, is it human, or does it have a soul? No, to be honest, the soul doesn't really come up, but there's still those questions are asked, and that's quite cool. One beta believes that she's like a real person, or not, she's not a real person, but she believes that she's just as valid as a person, and she's an artist, so she wants to keep being an artist, maybe if she can in the future. Whereas Tom, he has these prejudices and believes that she's nothing more than a computer program. So there's a quite cool bit going on there. Of course, because it's a mystery, thriller, crime novel kind of thing, I don't really want to go any further into the story as such, because I'll just spoil it straight away, because right at the beginning, you're just dumped into this situation, and it's mysterious from the beginning pretty much through to the very end. And there's twists, like every 50 pages or so, there's another twist and you find out more. So I can't really go into much more in-depth detail, but I'll just go through some of these other characters in the book. I guess another main character is the head of Panoply, and her name is Jane. Can't remember her second name now, but she's like in this interesting situation because there's this... she was involved in this incident 11 years earlier in the book, what they called the Clockmaker incidents. And the Clockmaker was this like renegade robot device which... replicated itself in a laboratory, and there was a big incident there that you find out as you go through the book, and of course it ties in with the main storyline as well. But she gets held captive by this robot intelligence, this Clockmaker, and she gets this other robot attached to the back of her neck, and she manages to escape, or the Clockmaker lets her go. And she has to then have this thing attached to the back of her neck. But if she sleeps, the robot tells her if she sleeps, she dies. And if she attempts to remove this thing stuck to the back of her neck, she dies. And if anyone comes within 7 meters of her or 8 meters of her, she dies. So she's been isolated and without sleep for 11 years in a row, which sets up quite an interesting character and quite an interesting situation. In any other Revelation space novel, this idea would actually be quite ordinary, but in this book, because you're sort of before that dystopia kind of melding plague transhuman kind of thing where all kinds of like alien intelligences and artificial intelligence are roaming around doing mysterious things, it really does stand out as quite an interesting thing in this book. I say an interesting, like a unique thing in the book. Also, we find out that Tom's wife was killed in the Clockmaker incident. So Tom and Jane sort of develop this close relationship in a way. I guess it's as close as you can be without getting more than 7 meters, or without getting less than 7 meters together. So that's quite cool. Also, in the book, later in the book, you get to see the robot's attempt to remove this robot stuck to the back of Jane's neck. And the way that it's set up in the book is that it's really extreme, and it's really thinking outside the box of the way that you're going to do it. But if you get used to sort of like Alistair Reynolds' other Revelation space books, the kind of thing that they do is really quite, it's tame compared to the things, especially like the things that I was talking about in the Diamond Dogs book, or part of the book of the previous Alistair Reynolds book that I reviewed here. And I pretty much guessed what they would do, or I guessed sort of like, oh, if I was in this situation, I'd do this to get out of it. And that's actually the final plan that they put in place. So that's quite interesting there. Next up, I guess, is a person called Gaffney, and the person, or the presence called Aurora, this mysterious presence, and she is like the main antagonist in the book, and Gaffney is her like inside man inside the Panoply, and he's quite high up as well. And you get to know them pretty much like in the first few chapters. You find out about those two, that they are there and pulling strings behind the scenes, but of course I'm not going to go into what they're doing, just that they exist. So the story continues. Well, I said I wasn't going to go into the story, but it does continue pretty much with Tom and his team doing their thing across the Glutenband, going backwards and forwards, trying to piece together what's happening. And along the way, there's like death and destruction, there's war, large-scale war, lots of action and all that kind of stuff. So that's pretty cool. One interesting thing that I want to say about the Panoply and this security force is the way it's controlled by the Demarchy setup there. It's because people don't let their police force use guns in habitats or use any lethal weapons against the population to keep them sort of in control, and don't let them have too much control over the people. So it leads to many situations in the book where the prefects, they're stuck without any firearms and without the tools that they need to actually do their job or to survive or anything. And that's what quite a lot of the tension comes from in this book, when they go up against massive enemies just with their own wits and not with any tools at all. And that's pretty cool. But at the end of the book, all the loose ends are tied up, and we discover who Aurora is, and you know how she wants to take over the Glitterband, because you know that's the kind of thing that we're talking about here, and it's a pretty good thriller kind of stuff there. But this really is my main complaint about the story itself, because at the end of the book, all the loose ends are tied up, And when I mean loose end, I'm talking every single loose end. Every bit of backstory that's mentioned for every single character and the universe itself, every single thing that is mentioned in the book comes together, all historical events, everything comes together, and it's tied up at the end of the main plot. And Tom understands it, and he gets his head around it, and it's used to resolve the conflict at the end. And the skill of Alistair Reynolds in this is absolutely amazing, because he's weaved a really, really complex plot. Normally his plots are quite complex, but this, there's levels of it, levels going down through the cake or onion or whatever you want to say with layers. You know, it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper, but it's just too perfect. There's no fuzziness or there's no ambiguity in anything there at all. It's... you know, all the motifs is just this. Every incident is this, and it all leads together to one thing, and it's all wrapped up by the end of the book. And it meant really that at the end of the book, I wasn't really that excited about it as well, because there's this disaster sweeping across the Glitterband, killing like unknown hundreds of thousands of people, and it just seems contrived as well at the end of the book that the situation is resolved by Tom Dreyfus. He pretty much picks up a gun and he goes in, and he's just got his gun and his wits to sort everything out at the end of the book, and it just felt a bit, like I say, a bit contrived there as well. And also, it's like the way that it's the solution as well. He just goes in and he just explains at long length, literally to you and to other characters, what has happened. And there's a bit of a Deus Ex Machina kind of thing at the end. I wouldn't really call it a Deus Ex Machina, but there's a device which keeps knowledge from Tom all the way through to the end, and then it's suddenly just revealed to him, almost for no, well, not for no reason, but it's just revealed to him. And also it's kept from us, and it's just revealed to us at the time. So although you've worked out a lot of the plot and a lot of the motivations and a lot of the thing that's going on, it's impossible to actually work it out yourself, because it's just tied up in something which is never revealed to you until it's explained by Tom in length at the end of the book. So that was a bit of a disappointment. Also, I'm not going to explain what happens, but it's like when you read a book or you're seeing a film like Mission Impossible, and they have the different masks. And so whenever you're seeing someone on the screen, you don't know if they're them or the other person, because they're done by the same actor, but just as if they're wearing another a mask. And it's that kind of thing. It's like, it's not lazy, but it's keeping information from the people watching that you could know. But you just, it takes too much suspension of disbelief. So it's not quite a Deus Ex Machina, but it's getting there. It's not that device at all, but that's one that of the same style, which I dislike in a way. But I don't want to give anything away about this. Another complaint about the story itself is that you get to know Thalia very well, and you go through all kinds of adventures with her, but then, like, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the book, her character and her storyline just drops out of the book. And she's done a lot, but what she actually goes through doesn't add enough information. It does add sort of like, you know, she is involved in major plot points, but by the end of the book, she just like drops out and doesn't have a lot to do with the resolution of the novel. And I thought her character just becomes a bit irrelevant at the end. And I found that disappointing for someone who we've spent so much time with and got to know quite well. The characters in the book, well, I've gone over quite a lot of the characters already. I think Reynolds' characters are always very strong in his books, and this novel, especially for the main characters, no exception. And also for quite a lot of the minor characters, like you get to meet a doctor here and another person there and a diplomat here, and you find out, you know, you realise that there's a whole world here. They've all got long histories, and you get to know them over the course of the book, and I really enjoyed that. The thing is, the character of Gaffney, who's like the inside man for Aurora inside the Panoply, he's got a very weak motivation and quite a weak character as well. Like, because Aurora, he's working with Aurora because he believes it's in the best interest of the Glitterband. It's sort of like set out quite early on in the book. I'm not giving anything away there. But even, like, his actions are a bit far-fetched for even someone who thinks he's working in the best interest of the Glitterband. And then he learns the truth and he sees what Aurora is actually like, and along with us at the same time. But yet he keeps going with his same actions when they're clearly not in the best interest of the Glitterband. So he just becomes, at the beginning, it's a bit weak, and you know, there's this sort of like, oh, I'm betraying these people for the common good of everyone itself. And I think it's been put in there to make him more sympathetic and have more depth, but it just gets discarded halfway through with not a lot of explanation. He just becomes like a one-dimensional Bond villain. It's like, ah, I'm going to do this, and I will take over here. And it was a bit His character really let me down a bit, I think. The technology in the book, let's get onto this. I made a few points here. There's lots of stuff to talk about, but I'm already running quite long on this podcast, so I'll just mention a few of them. The whip hounds, which is cool. They're these handheld devices that the prefects use instead of firearms. So they don't have guns, they have whip hounds. And they're like this handle which sprouts a long, thin, flexible, like, energy filled filament, and it's got a cutting edge on one side and like a dull edge on another, and it's really thin. And then there's an internal computer, like an intelligence in there, which manipulates the filament so it can crawl like a snake on the ground, and it can jump, and it can also stand out straight and be used like a sword. You can cut things through it, and cut through things with it, and you can sort of tie up prisoners and all sorts of cool things, and that was really fun. Also, there's this quite an interesting idea that I like called a security virus, which means you can only read a document if you've been infected by a tailored virus, and that was cool too. Anyway, lots more technology on top of that, again, as you'd expect from Alistair Reynolds, and a lot of like technologies that I mentioned is in his other books, like of stuff that happened before the Melding Plague and after it, who explained again in here. So you get to know sort of some backstory to other novels as well. But you can pretty much read any of Alistair Reynolds' Revelation Space books in any order, except of course there's a few which are like direct sequels and prequels to each other. I'm sure you can find out those on itself. The themes of the book, they're quite diverse, actually. There's like I say, lots of democracy, authority, anarchy kind of stuff going on, and lots of things like questions that arise, like what can we sacrifice? You know, how many people can we sacrifice for the good of many? You know, that kind of thing is good. Another theme is racism, which I quite liked. One of Tom's team is called Sparva, another quite cool character, and he's a pig. And in Revelation Space, a world, we often meet these things called pigs, which started out as pigs, really. And I think they're genetically modified. Again, it's a bit mysterious, actually, in most of the books. They're genetically modified pigs to provide organs for transplant into humans. And, of course, you cross so many genes into the pigs that they're more human-like than pig-like. But they've still got, like, a pig face, pig skin, pig hands, but they like low-functioning humans. But Sparva is a very capable pig, and at this point in the Revelation Space timeline, he has risen to the highest level of any pig in society so far, and he's got more human-like hands and human-like capabilities. And of course, he's a victim of racism, because pigs are sort of, they're not like just perceived to be like a lower level of human. They really are a lower level of human, actually evolved and manipulated with the genome from pigs themselves. But then, on top of that, like I said before, there's these beta-level intelligences that Tom interacts with, and this is like talking about like prejudice and racism in a much more subtle way than "Hey, you're a pig, you dirty pig," and this is a different level of it. You know, these with Tom's interaction, I actually quite like that. There's a lot of other themes as well, but those are the ones that stood out for me and that I enjoyed reading about the most. Finally, let's just get on, wrap it up. Rating wise, I really liked the book. It was exciting and interesting all the way through, because you just dumped into it, and that's what I really like about Alistair Reynolds' writing, is that he really goes, okay, I'm just gonna start off the book and just go through stuff as though you already know the universe. And even if you don't know it, it's explained slowly and things are revealed and events are hinted at all the way through that make it very interesting. I really quite like that writing style of just dumping you in at the deep end and letting you sort itself out. The story is amazing. All the threads, I said, expertly wound up together. I really actually like the police kind of procedural bits as well. How, you know, they go, okay, can we do this? Can we do that? Lots of politicking in the office back home. Can we... What rules can we use in this situation, and how can we twist them here to get our job done? Lots of good stuff there. However, it was let down, like I say, by the character and the motivation of Gaffney, this main character, this main bad guy, and also his actions later on in the book. Some of them, and some of the other villains in the book as well, they seem to easily escape from some situations and get away with some situations, and you'd think, wait a second, this Panoply and Tom and these other people, they're much more capable in so many other situations, and yet they sort of make a bad decision in this case and make or put it this way, they sort of go, okay, I'm not willing to sacrifice this in this case. In other cases, they're willing to sacrifice a lot more. So the exploits of some of the bad guys seem to be facilitated by weaker writing, just to move the plot on a bit. And also, like I said, this final showdown in the book itself between Tom and his main enemies, where he pretty much just explains his way to the end of the book to you and to the other characters there. I really was a bit disappointed by the end of it. But overall, I'm going to give it 4 stars. 4-star book, solid 4-star book, I think, here. But yeah, definitely pick up this book or pretty much any other book by Alistair Reynolds. I've never been that disappointed with any of his books, especially the ones in the Revelation Space universe, because maybe I just like it. Some end bits here of the podcast now, just to quickly finish up here, because I think this is going on quite a long podcast, but it's a good book, I don't mind. And yeah, I had an email, just read it. I'm not going to go into it too much about it, but to ask why I give so many high ratings to so many books. And actually, if you go over to the sfbrp.com wiki page, there's a list linked straight from the main page of the wiki, which lists all the star ratings of all the books so far. And looking at it here, I can see that, like, including this book now, I guess, like, eight of the books that I've read so far, I've given a rating of 4 stars or more, and only 3 of the books have been given a rating under 2 stars. And, well, I guess this comes down to a few reasons. First of all is that I like reading good books. So when I go out and find a book to read, I'm going to pick books by authors who I know are pretty good already. So that's one reason why I give good book reviews. Another reason is if I'm like, because, you know, I've read quite a lot of these books that I reviewed already in the past, so I'm rereading them for the podcast. And of course, if I'm rereading a book, it's going to be quite good anyway, so I'll probably give it quite a high rating. And it's more just to share books that I know I've enjoyed with you guys. And another reason is because a lot of the books, or some other of the books, are classic books that I've not read yet and that I'm reading for the first time. So of course, if it's a classic book and it's been held up as a great book over 40 years or more, the chances are that I'm probably going to give it a high rating, but not always, because, like I said, lots of people hold up the book Contact as a great book, and just checking here, yep, I gave it a 1-star review. So it's not always like that, but that's the reason. You know, if I'm going to spend €15 on a new book like this one, it wasn't new, €15, €12.40 on a book that just comes out for the first time in Germany here in paperback, I'm going to pretty much check a book that I like, or that I guess I'm going to like and give a good review about, just because I like reading good books. Anyway, the next book, actually the book I'm reading now that I've put off doing this review for, is a book called The Darkness That Comes Before by R. Scott Bakker. But it's not a science fiction book, it's a fantasy book. And I'm reading it on recommendation of a podcast that I listen to called the Geek Nights Podcast. And it's the book club, it's their first book club. So I thought I'd read that, and I'm enjoying it quite a lot. But I'm not going to review it here because it's a fantasy book, not a science fiction book. There's actually quite a lot of books that I've got sitting around the house now. I've got I've not started reading the next science fiction book, because I'm reading this Prince of Nothing book. So I've got Black Man by Richard Morgan, Affinity's End by C.J. Sherry, Arthur C. Clarke's Glide Path, Encounter with Tiber by Buzz Aldrin and John Barnes, which I've actually read before. There's a trashy book called from the 60s called The Robot Brains. And also I've recently picked up Joe Haldeman's Forever War, which is like a classic book that I've just never got round to reading, and I want to read it for this podcast, and just because I hear it's a good book. And finally, I've got Matter by Ian M. Banks, but that's another huge chunky book, so I'm going to put that off for a bit. I think I'm going to go for the next book, Forever War, The Forever War by Joe Haldeman, as I can probably read it in about a day. And that way I can get out the next podcast with a bit less delay, with less than sort of a week and a half or 2 weeks in between the next book. So the book after that, I'll let you decide. Of all those ones that I just mentioned, Black Man, Glide Path, Encounter with Tiber, Robot Brains, and what was the other one? Infinity's End. You just email me, luke at juggler.net, to tell me what you want to read out of all those books. Or give more book requests, and you can do that by email, or just go to the SFBRP wiki, and there's quite a few people now have put down their requests. Arthur C. Clarke and Stephen Baxter seem to be getting a lot of love, as is Ian M. Banks. Also, somebody's put down quite a few fantasy novels, but I won't be reviewing them. I might read them, but I won't be reviewing them for this podcast. I've got nothing against fantasy, but I just haven't read a lot of it since maybe I was about 14 or 15, and I haven't read a lot of science fiction, so I'd rather stick to what I know, because I'm not sure if I could do a good job of critiquing fantasy as well as I can get into it and talk about science fiction. So that's it. Wow, a good 30-minute podcast this time. I'll try and keep it a bit shorter next time, because that was always the plan. It was always going to be 10 to 12-minute podcasts, and here we are, 30 minutes. So thanks for listening. Catch you later, and have fun reading some of these books.